Okay, let's go on to collector's use of affidavits as evidence. The introduction on this is section, this section focuses on collector's use of affidavits to proffer evidence found in the affidavits themselves. Okay, this is where your collectors are putting in affidavits to bolster the evidence that they are providing, supposedly. This section examines the use of affidavits to authenticate or certify business records that are introduced into evidence. Now, that's a problem, as we all know, because they like to say, oh, well, these are business records. Well, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. Thus, the section examines affidavits meant to constitute evidence rather than those used just to authenticate other documentary evidence. With rare exceptions, affidavits are not admissible at trial. Now, that's interesting. Not admissible at trial. Okay, there's a couple cases here. LHR Incorporated versus IREE, spelled A-Y-R-E-E. It is a Maryland Circuit Court decision from 2010. And this citation is available at a website, consumerlaw.org/unreported. Okay. These case citations are invaluable. All right. Now, I'll go back and read this last sentence. The rare exception, with rare exceptions, affidavits are not admissible at trial, but collectors often use them to aid a motion for a summary or default judgment. By having an employee state in an affidavit that the fact is true. Okay. Well, hang on. Excuse me. I missed something. Based upon the affiant's personal knowledge. Okay. Debt buyers in particular may seek to conceal their inability to produce the best evidence of a factual allegation by having an employee state in an affidavit that the fact is true. Now, anybody that's been out there and been sued in a credit card case has probably run into that. Affidavits must be made on personal knowledge and show affirmatively that the affiant is competent to testify as to the matter stated therein. And there's a case citation. There's several of them here. Palisades Collection, Palisades Collection, LLC versus Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z. That's a 2005 decision. Then there is Citibank v. Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. And there is also Unifund, U-N-I, F-U-N-D, C-C-R Partners, v. Dover, D-O-V-E-R. And there's also Luke, L-U-K-E, v. Unifund, U-N-I-F-U-N-D, C-C-R, Partners. And that's a Texas Appeals Court case, 2007. Okay. An affidavit must indicate the source of the affiant's knowledge. And that's something that's really important, that they can't just say, well, I have the knowledge. They have to state where it is from. And there is a case citation for that, which is Sherman Acquisition, that's A-C-Q-U-I-S-I-T T-I-O-N, 2, like Roman numeral 2, LP, limited partnership, versus Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A. That is a Texas appeals case from 2007. Similarly, an attorney's affirmation which is not based upon personal knowledge of the fact has no probative value. Okay, if he doesn't have personal knowledge, and how is an attorney going to have personal knowledge of anything having to do with your credit card debt? We always deal with that from the standpoint of an attorney, either as a witness or they represent someone. They can't be both. They can't testify when they are representing somebody. Now, there is a case citation with this. Again, that sentence says, similarly, an attorney's affirmation which is not based upon personal knowledge of the fact has no probative value. Citation on that is Citibank v. Beckerman, spelled B-E-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. And that's a New York appeals case. Okay, thus when an affiant asserts that a statement was mailed to the consumer, the affiant must either attest to personal knowledge that the statement was mailed or describe a regular office practice for mailing documents of that type. They can't just say, oh, it was mailed. And there's case citations here for that also. Palisades Collection, LLC, versus Gonzalez. It's going to be the same one that I mentioned earlier. There's several here. I'm not going to give all of them. But another one is Norfolk Financial Corp, F-I-N period, Corporation, versus McDonald, spelled M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. And that's a Massachusetts case. And there's one, there's a comment in here, debt buyer's employee could not prove the contract had been sent by creditor to consumer. Funny thing. It is clearly inadequate for a debt buyer's employee to state in an affidavit without more that the originating creditor had mailed out a contract to the consumer, as the debt buyer's employee has no personal knowledge whether the originating creditor mailed the contract to the consumer. You got to be real careful when you're dealing with these affidavits. Read them and pick them apart. Learn to pick the things apart. Is what they are saying actually correct? If they're saying that I know this, well, think to yourself, can they possibly know this, or would they not actually have that knowledge? Similarly, there can be little question that an employee of a third-party debt buyer in a chain of transfers cannot authenticate a document memorializing the assignment from the first to the second debt buyer in a chain of transfers. Okay, that's a bit of a long sentence. I'm going to go back and read it again. Similarly, there can be little question that an employee of a third-party debt buyer in a chain of transfers cannot authenticate a document memorializing the assignment from the first to the second debt buyer in a chain of transfers. There's just a whole bunch of case citations. I'll give you a couple of them. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, versus Asset Acceptance Corporation, one of our favorite companies. That's a 2000 Westlaw. That's a Southern District of Ohio case from 2000. Then there's also Norfolk Financial Corporation, N-O-R-F-O-L-K, F-I-N period, Corp, versus Mazard, spelled M-A-Z-A-R-D. That's a 2009 case from Massachusetts, November 12th. And I'll give you one more. Colorado Capital, and that's with an A-L, C-A-P-I-T-A-L, Investments, Inc., the Villar, V-I-L-L-A-R. And that case is also available at consumerlaw.org /unreported. There's going to be some of these citations that are going to be there where you can go and get them right off their website. Okay. The collector's employee has no firsthand knowledge as to the assignment or the creation of the assignment document when they're going back to the assignment from the original creditor to the first buyer. So you have to stop and think, when this person is swearing to something in an affidavit, are they actually in a position to have that information or not? If not, you got to do an affidavit to rebut it. In a typical debt buyer situation, the affiant will not even have reviewed the file, but will have relied upon the fact that others have determined the accuracy of the information in the affidavit. The affiant does little more than sign a stack of affidavits, i.e. robo-signing, without any knowledge of an individual consumer's account, or even any knowledge of what type of information the collector might store on its consumer accounts, or what support there might be for the information the affiant is swearing to. This is one of the most bogus things that they do, is putting these affidavits in. And you need to consider the stuff even if you're dealing with a lawsuit from the original creditor. There are some of these things that won't apply to that, but some that will. A federal court explained how one debt buyer's affidavits were not based upon personal knowledge. Okay, and this case is Midland Funding, a very familiar name to many of us. Midland Funding, LLC. The Brent, B-R-E-N-T. And that is a Northern District of Ohio 2009 case. Okay. The office, and this is going back to explaining this, the office fulfills about 200 to 400 affidavits a day. One of 10 specialists sign each affidavit after finding a stack of affidavits on a printer. After signing the affidavit, it is sent on to a notary located in a different office to be notarized. Is there something wrong with that picture? The notary is supposed to witness the signature. They should be sitting at the same desk or table. The specialist has no idea where the affidavit comes from and rarely checks the information found on the affidavit, although the specialist has access to certain data to check information in the affidavit. The affidavit is then sent on to a law firm to attach to a complaint. Robo-signing. And one thing to throw in here, anytime that you have an affidavit from anyone, even if it is the original creditor or if it's from debt collectors or something, get used to and make standard procedure what you're doing to Google the name of the notaries and the name of the affiant, and put it in Google, Sue Smith RoboSigner. Put the words RoboSigner behind it, and you'll be amazed at what you come up with, and this is evidence that you can use that this is a known RoboSigner and not to be trusted, and you can make that an issue. All right. Despite the affidavit claiming personal knowledge, the specialist has no knowledge of the debtor or the debtor's account, obviously. Specialist signing a particular affidavit is fairly random. While the affidavit claims that the affiant or one of the affiant's employees was the one who hired the law firm to process the case, in fact, the affiant has no employees and has no knowledge as to how the law firm was chosen. And this is another thing. In these affidavits, they'll be things. I'm helping with one case where it was stated that the original creditor had hired a law firm, but it doesn't state the name of the law firm in the affidavit. It doesn't say they hired Tom Smith, attorney at law, and that's a problem, and you need to make an issue of it. Okay, the affiant claims personal knowledge of the debt buyer purchasing the account, but the affiant also admits to having no role in the purchase of the account and to not knowing any of the terms of the purchase. How can they know what's really going on if they don't have that? Finally, the affiant claims that the debtor is not a minor or mentally incapacitated when the affiant has had no contact with the debtor. How can they make that claim? Make an issue of that. What it does is it throws the credibility of their affidavit into question. And where other things may be damaging to you, if you can use these types of things to discredit the and show that these affidavits are just robo-signed and that these people are not stating things that are true, they're not in possession of this actual first-hand knowledge, you can get the whole affidavit stricken from the record using this as leverage. And, of course, the affiant's signature is not properly notarized because the notary did not witness the signature. Now, there's no way for them to know that at the court. That's very, very, very true there. Okay. Let's talk about conclusory affidavits and missing attachments, because that's something that's very important. The affidavit should not be conclusory, okay? And we have a couple case citations here. One is Luke, L-U-K-E, versus Unifund, C-C-R, Partners. It's a 2000 case out of the Texas Appeals Court, August 31st of 2007. There's also a case, Hay, H-A-Y, v. Citibank, Texas Appeals, September 14th from 06. All right. General statements in an affidavit which are only conclusions of law or fact do not prove a case. Okay. Just because somebody comes to a conclusion of law, that doesn't prove a case. And there's a citation for that here. Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, the O-S-I Funding Group, F-U-N-D-I-N-G, Group, Inc. That's a Florida case out of 2004. Florida Circuit Court, February 2, 2004. Good examples of inadequate affidavits are those that state that the consumer owes a certain amount without attaching any documentation to support that conclusion. Now, how many times have we seen that? They say, oh, well, you owe $4,250, but they don't attach anything to back that up. That's a problem. Case citations on that. Terry will love this one. LVNV Funding, LLC, versus Riley, R-E-I-L-L-Y. It's a Connecticut Superior Court, July 17th of 2009. Another case is Suggs, spelled S-U-G-G-S, v. Sherman acquisition, that's S-H-E-R-M-A-N, acquisition, A-C-Q-I-U-I-S-I-T-I-O-N, L-P, and that's a Florida Circuit Court, 2005. And one more on that, Capital One Bank, V. Tony. That is a Ohio Court of Appeals, March of 2007. Okay, we'll go back and read this. Are those that state that the consumer owes a certain amount without attaching any documentation to support that conclusion and an affidavit claiming that an assignment has been made without attaching the actual assignment document. Now, that is very, very common when they do not attach the actual assignment document. They can't do that. Some case law on that, Powers, P-O-W-E-R-S, V, Hudson and Keese, spelled H-U-D-S-O-N, and Keys, K-E-Y-S-E, LLC. And by the way, Hudson & Keys was a big debt-buying operation that went bankrupt last year. Georgia Court of Appeals from 2008. Another case is capital letters P-R-A, and then Roman numeral 3, LLC, versus McDowell, spelled M-A-C-D-O-W-E-L-L. And that is a New York Civil Court, 2007. And one more, Palisades Collection, LLC. Some of these you'll start recognizing the same names over and over. Again, that's Palisades Collection, LLC, versus Gonzalez. And that, again, is a New York case, December 12th of 05. Give everybody a chance to write that down. Okay. It is hearsay and incompetent for an affidavit to state, and I like that, it's hearsay and incompetent for an affidavit to state that the affiant has reviewed a loan file and that the debt is in default without, in fact, attaching the actual loan documentation. These guys that just make a complaint and they don't put anything with it, like they said, it's hearsay. That's how you attack it. And incompetent for an affidavit to state that the affiant has reviewed a loan file and that the debt is in default without, in fact, attaching the actual loan documentation. Case law on that, several of them. New England Savings Bank versus Bedford, spelled B-E-D, F-O-R-D, Realty Corporation. And that is a Connecticut 96 decision. And let's see, TOPPS, T-O-P-P-S, V, Unicorn. That's interesting. UNICORN Insurance Company. And that is an Illinois appellate court case from 95. One more on this because this is really important stuff here. Cole Taylor, that's C-O-L-E, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, Bank, V. Corrigan, C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N. That is an Illinois appeals court case from 92. an affidavit clearly provides no evidence as to the nature of account statements, contracts, or other documents that are allegedly attached to the affidavit when the documents, in fact, are not attached. Now, let me read that again. An affidavit clearly provides no evidence as to the nature of account statements, contracts, or other documents that are allegedly attached to the affidavit when the documents, in fact, are not attached. Case citations on that? Cole Taylor Bank versus Corrigan. C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N. That is an Illinois appeals case from 92. Then there's Luke, L-U-K-E, v. Unifund, U-N-I, F-U-N-D, C-C-R Partners. That is a Texas appeals case from August of 07. Okay, such omissions, the omissions not having the documents attached, such omissions occur surprisingly often, particularly with debt buyers. Thus, an affidavit is inadequate where it references various documents as Exhibit A concerning the debt, but where Exhibit A is not attached to the affidavit. And there is a one case citation there, which is Powers, P-O-W-E-R-S, versus Hudson, H-U-D-S-O-N, and Keys, K-E-Y-S-E, LLC. And that is a Georgia Appeals Court, 2008. The debt buyer affidavits often reference a computer tape or schedule of accounts assigned to the debt buyer, but fail to attach the tape or schedule. Are you seeing the pattern here? If that affidavit references something, it better be attached, or you attack it as being hearsay. And the case citations, there's a ton of them on this one. I'll read three or four of them here. Gigli, spelled G-I-G-L-I, v. Palisades Collection, LLC. And this is out of the Middle District of Pennsylvania, August of 2008. Velocity, V-E-L-O-C-I-T-Y, Investments, V. Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, and that is Connecticut Superior Court, June of 07. And we have Wirth, W-I-R-T-H, v. Cash, C-A-C-H, LLC. And that is a Georgia Court of Appeals decision out of 2009. And I could, there's a whole entire listing here. There's one that I want to read here, give you, because it's available. The whole thing is available on the website. Unifund CCR Partners v. VO, V-O. And that's Pennsylvania, February of 2009. And that case is available at www.consumerlaw.org/unreported. As is also is listed there is Belmont, B-E-L, M-O-N-T, Financial Services Group, Inc. versus Hawkins, Hawkins. So there really is just so much stuff here, as you can see. I read a fraction of what is here for case citations for this stuff to give you an idea of the amount of information that is here. Okay, carefully review all documents of assignment because they are often incomplete or illegible. That's another thing. If they put any documents into a case that you can't read, they're worthless, and you need to challenge them as being illegible. In one case, the court found an assignment to be improper when the debt buyer submitted only 4 pages of a 20-plus page loan sale agreement. This is going to be important. Kind of perk your ears up a little bit here because there's a little explanation. They submitted only 4 pages of a 20-plus page loan sale agreement. The court observed the first page entitled Loan Sale Agreement merely identifies the parties and states the effective date of the transaction. The second page contains a pair of signatures. The third page contains a redacted table of 4 accounts. These 3 pages do not appear to have any relationship to one another, given that they were respectively numbered I, 7, and 19 of 28. You look at these details, that's bits and pieces of who knows what thrown together. That doesn't constitute anything at all. Now, there's a case citation that goes with this, C and W, Asset Acquisition, LLC, versus Somogyi, spelled S-O-M-O-G-Y-I. And this is a Missouri Court of Appeals case from 2004. It's just amazing, all of the stuff that's in here. Okay, there's also, that was a reference to something else. Let's talk a little bit about inconsistent, sloppy, and false information. When documents are in fact attached to the affidavit, look for inconsistencies between the documents and the affidavit itself, which will call into question the evidence being proffered both by the affidavit and by the documents. Now, before I give you the case citations, I want to mention we've got a case that I'm helping a friend with in Kansas who is being sued in state court by a law firm saying they are representing FIA. They sent him so-called validation way, way, way after he demanded it. And the validation consisted of several account statements, credit card account statements, which obviously, as most of us know, is not validation, doesn't even come close. But what is really interesting is the amount that is shown or stated to be due in their demand for payment and the amount on the statements are completely different, and the account numbers are completely different. In other words, the statements provided don't even begin to relate. They then took this into litigation, and at this point in time, we're in discovery with them. They still don't even see that error, and we are not about to bring it up at this point in time. It's very blatant. Look and compare account numbers and amounts on all the documentation that you are dealing with, because it's very important. Again, I'll read this and then give you the case citation. When documents are in fact attached to the affidavit, Look for inconsistencies between the documents and the affidavit itself, which will call into question the evidence being proffered both by the affidavit and by the documents. Okay, now, there was just a reference here. There's not a case citation on it. Okay, similarly, look for inconsistencies between the affidavit, the complaint, a collector's summary judgment motion, if you've gotten that far, and other affidavits and documents in the case. In other words, double-check everything against everything else. For example, in one case, the debt buyer's affidavit specified a date of assignment over 3 months after the date specified in the alleged bill of sale. The affidavit specified a date of assignment over 3 months after the date specified in the alleged date of sale. Case citations, Unifund, CCR, assignee, A-S-S-I-G-N-E-E, of Providian, P-R-O-V-I-D-I-A-N, versus Ahan, spelled A-Y-H-A-N. And that is a Washington Court of Appeals case from August of 08. You can also see Recovery, Management, Systems, Limited, LTD, the Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N. That is an Ohio Court of Appeals case from November of 08. Okay, see if the affidavit also contains false statements. Look for statements that the affiant is employed by the plaintiff, when in fact the affiant is employed by a collection agency hired by the plaintiff. Does an affiant employed by a debt buyer claim to have personal knowledge of the practices of the original creditor when it would be impossible for that affiant to have that knowledge? You know, if they didn't work there, how would they have that knowledge? In one case, the court sided with disapproval a debt buyer's affidavits and other documents that included three different interest rates and which referred to the debt buyer as being the original creditor and the entity from whom goods or services were purchased. How ridiculous is that? And a case citation on that is Barajas, spelled B-A-R-A-J. A-S, V, Harvest, H-A-R-V-E-S-T, Credit, Management, and then, this is a strange one, Roman numeral 6, V-I, dash, B, LLC. And that is a Texas Appeals case from August of 2008. You'll notice that these case citations that I'm giving you are not something from 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. These are all very recent, very usable case citations that are in here. This stuff is fantastic. Okay, now you get into the notarizations and signatures. Look for deficiencies in the affidavit's signature and notarization. Is the name of the individual signing the affidavit disclosed on the affidavit? Aha. Is the affidavit properly signed and notarized? You'd be amazed how many times they aren't. And here again, always do a Google on these people to see if they're robo-signers, known robo-signers. Make an issue out of that. Some states require that an affidavit disclose the affiant's employer. Has the affidavit done this? A number of state laws require that sworn pleadings from other states be accompanied by a certificate authenticating the oath giver's authority. Now stop and think about that for a minute. A number of state laws require that sworn pleadings from other states be accompanied by a certificate authenticating the oath giver's authority. In other words, where did they get their authority? All right. And courts may reject sworn pleadings submitted without that certificate. And I've got some case citations. First National Bank of Dillsboro. That's what it says. Dillsboro. Boy, that's a name. Versus Mulford, Mulford. Indiana Court of Appeals. This says 1911, but I'm sure it's 2011. I think that's a typo. Citibank v. Suen, spelled S-U-E-N. New York Appeals, 2005. Another one is Discover Bank v. Kagan, K-A-G-A-N. That's a New York Appeals from 05 as well. Okay, let's go back to where we were here. All right, I'm going to read this again, and then so you get the context of what I'm going to pick up. A number of state laws require that sworn pleadings from other states be accompanied by a certificate authenticating the oath giver's authority, and courts may reject sworn pleadings submitted without that certificate, particularly if the consumer objects. And I've got a case citation there. MBNA, America Bank, v. Staley, S-T-E-H-L-Y, New York Appeals, 2008. Indiana's law, which is typical of such statutes, requires out-of-state affidavits sworn before judges and notaries to be certified under the seal of the clerk of court in the county where such judge or notary practices. Other states may be more liberal in accepting out-of-state affidavits when they are properly notarized in that state. Okay, and I'm going to give you, I don't want to go into that. This is some state statutes, and there's a million of them. Or even when the witness just affirms under the penalties of perjury. I'll read that. Other states may be more liberal in accepting out-of-state affidavits when they are properly notarized in that state, or even when the witness just affirms under the penalties of perjury. Also look for the sufficiency of the notarization. Robo-signing operations often can be sloppy on that score. For example, it is not uncommon for an affidavit to state that it is signed by the affiant in one state and the notary states that the affiant appeared before the notary in a different state. And oh yes, that's happened. Case citation on that, HSBC Bank, V. Thompson, Thompson. That is an Ohio appeals court, September of 2010. This, in fact, is a felony in a number of states. That's where they have two different states, one for the affiant and one for the notary. And this happens. Here again, this is, you scrutinize every one of your documents. Look for these things because they're out there. This, in fact, is a felony in a number of states. Look also to see what type of documentation the notary keeps of its notarizations, whether this comports with state requirements, and what information is derived from such documentation if kept. Now, one of the things that I have considered, and I think it's an avenue that we need to try and pursue, is going to be checking into these Secretary of State going to get copies of the notary books for the dates. Stop and think about this. If somebody is working at Discover Bank, FIA, one of the mills that is cranking out these affidavits for their debt collection people, if these people are notarizing a couple hundred documents a day, are they keeping a logbook, which is required under the state laws? Go to the Secretary of State and request copies of the logbook. And if they don't have a logbook, that notary signature is disqualified and that document becomes a prime candidate to be stricken from the record because of notarial fraud. All sorts of angles on this. Okay. I'm going to cover one more section here. It's not very much, but it's extremely important. And then I'm going to wrap it up because we've been almost an hour here. This isn't going over all of the affidavits. We will get a little bit more. Consumer use of a counter affidavit. How many times have we talked about how valuable it is to submit a counter affidavit? It's extremely important. The consumer should consider submitting an affidavit to counter facts alleged in the collector's affidavit, thus placing those facts in dispute. Always remember, if they put something in and you don't argue it, it means you agree. Silence is acquiescence. This response should be enough to defeat the collector's summary judgment motion. And I'll make a comment on a situation that I've talked about, a personal case that I had. I had in one of my credit pull cases in federal court, they submitted a motion for summary judgment. They had an affidavit with it by a lawyer for the collection firm stating that she knew all about this stuff. And I completely dissected and shot down her affidavit with a counter affidavit. As soon as the lawyer on the other side saw that pleading when it was posted on Pacer, he called me and asked me, how much do you want to settle? It was that quick. And by the time we got things done and got the settlement done, my memorandum in opposition to their summary judgment was before the court, and the judge went ahead and ruled on it, and he denied their motion for summary judgment. It was a moot point because the two came together, the settlement and that came together. Point being, I won because I discredited their affidavit. Okay, if the court finds the consumer's affidavit conclusory or lacking in personal knowledge, the court should apply the same standard to the collector's affidavit. Stop and think about that. If the court finds the consumer's affidavit conclusory or lacking in personal knowledge, the court should apply the same standard to the collector's affidavit. Now, I would think you'd want to make that an argument somewhere. You could put that into your documents. But as I've said many times, when you are doing an affidavit, it should never have anything in it that can be construed as coming to a conclusion, giving an opinion. You never say, well, it is my belief. You can't go with beliefs in an affidavit. It has to be knowledge. It has to be first-hand factual knowledge that you state. Otherwise, it should not be in there. Because if you put conclusions or opinions in there, what you are doing is you are nullifying the document. They can blow it right out of the water, and the rest, you may make one major mistake by doing that, and the rest of it could be very pertinent and absolutely correct, and they can discredit your whole affidavit and get it stricken because you make that one mistake. Okay, we're going to go just a little bit more here, and then that's it. Proof using documents. The business records exception. Business records used to prove a collector's causes of action are hearsay. Okay? Federal Rule of Evidence 801C provides that. Hearsay is a statement other than one made by the declarant while testifying at the trial or hearing, offered in evidence to prove the truth of the matter asserted. I'll go back and read that again. Business records to prove a collector's cause of action are hearsay and must fit within the business records exception to the rules prohibiting hearsay evidence in order to be admitted into evidence. Most state rules of evidence are similar to Federal Rule of Evidence 803 paren 6. That means 6 in parentheses behind it for those of you that may not be familiar. 803 and then a 6 in parentheses, which establishes that a business record is exempt from the hearsay rule if it is, and I'm going to read this, made at or near the time by or from information transmitted by a person with knowledge, if kept in the course of a regularly conducted business activity, and if it was the regular practice of that business activity to make the record or data compilation, all is shown by the testimony of the custodian or other qualified witness or by certification that complies with federal requirements as to such certification, unless the source of information or the method or circumstances of preparation indicate lack of trustworthiness. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple case citations on that. Great Seneca, S-E-N-E-C-A, Financial versus Felty, spelled F-E-L-T-Y, Ohio Court of Appeals, 2006. Then there is also Citibank v. Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, Washington Court of Appeals, 2007. One requirement is that the record be contemporaneous, that is, the record was created at the same time as the event the record is documenting occurred. The record is not admissible if it was created years later by either the original creditor or by a debt buyer. Again, I'm going to read that. The record is not admissible if it was created years later by either the original creditor or by a debt buyer. The document must be kept in the regular course of a business activity as part of a regular practice of conducting that activity. Thus, the collector cannot create the record for use in litigation. They can't just create something to use in the court case. Couple of case citations. Ray, R-A-E, v. State, S-T-A-T-E. Florida District Court of Appeals, 94. Reach, R-E-A-C-H, out, incorporated. The Capital, spelled with a T-A-L, Associates, Inc., Georgia Court of Appeals, from 85. Okay, the record also cannot lack trustworthiness. Inconsistencies between the record and collector affidavits, pleadings, or other documents can suggest a lack of trustworthiness in the records themselves. And see, if you see this, you need to bring this up. There's too many discrepancies, Your Honor. This information is not trustworthy. If the documents are introduced as true copies of what was sent to the consumer, they should not contain handwritten notes that were added after the document was sent to the consumer. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit further here to finish this up because this is general requirements for affidavits certifying business records, and then we're done. General requirements for affidavits certifying business records. When business records are introduced at trial, they are introduced by the testimony of the custodian of those records or some other qualified witness. Okay, that's Federal Rules of Evidence 803, paren 6. They can't just be introduced by anybody. The lawyer, can he introduce them? If he does, you better object. When they are utilized as attachments to a summary judgment motion, they also must be certified by a custodian of the records or other qualified person. Okay? The witness or affiant must be familiar not just with the records, but with how the business records were created. And that's very important. That's even that's put in italics in here to bring it out, the importance of it. The witness or affiant must be familiar not just with the records, but with how the business records were created. The federal rule concerning this certification states that the business records should be A, accompanied by a written declaration of its custodian or other qualified person. Declaration is a sworn statement. Declaration or other of its custodian or other qualified person certifying that the record, A, was made at or near the time of the occurrence of the matter set forth by or from information transmitted by a person with knowledge of those matters, B, was kept in the course of the regularly conducted activity, and C, was made by the regularly conducted activity as a regular practice. Okay, and that's Federal Rules of Evidence 902, parens 11. If you want to go look at that and reference that, 902, parens 11, Federal Rules of Evidence. Documents must be accompanied by an affidavit that is made on personal knowledge, sets forth facts as would be admissible in evidence, and shows that the affiant is competent to testify to the matter stated in the affidavit. Okay. How can somebody show that they are competent to testify to the matter stated in the affidavit? Can you make an argument? Well, I'm competent to testify. Oh, really? You have knowledge of this? Oh, how is it that you have knowledge of that? What do you do that gives you the knowledge? Start asking these questions. There are several case citations here. Great Seneca, S-E-N-E-C-A, Financial versus Felty, F-E-L-T-Y. It's an Ohio Court of Appeals 2006 case. Another one is Palisades Collection, LLC, versus Kalal, K-A-L-A-L. That's a Wisconsin Court of Appeals case from 2010. And then there is Unifund CCR Partners versus Lett, L-E-T-T. That is an Alabama case from May of 2009. And that is also available at www.consumerlaw.org/unreported. Okay, I'm going to go back here and reread the last sentence so you get the context. Documents must be accompanied by an affidavit that is made on personal knowledge, sets forth facts as would be admissible in evidence, and shows that the affiant is competent to testify to the matter stated in the affidavit. This is the case even for an affidavit from the originating creditor. And there's a case citation for that of HSBC Bank versus Griswold, G-R-I-S-W-O-L-D, and I kind of doubt that's not Howard Griswold. That is a Wisconsin Court of Appeals case from 2010. Okay, if the affidavit does not explicitly state that the affiant has personal knowledge of the creation, and here again, the word creation is in italics here to really emphasize this. If they don't have personal knowledge of the creation of the records, then the records cannot be introduced. Somebody says, oh, well, I've got knowledge of the records. Really? How'd you get that? Well, I looked at a computer screen. Do you have knowledge of the creation, how the account is set up, who does what? What is the procedure? Where does the account? And one of the questions that I'd always want to ask, where does the original application go? That would be a very interesting question to ask in every one of these, wouldn't it? There's a case citation for this, Chase Bank versus Curran, C-U-R-R-E-N. That's an Ohio Court of Appeals, December of 2010. It is not enough that an affiant is familiar with the business records. The affiant must be familiar with how the records were created near the time of the charges being incurred. Case citation, just same one we had before, HSBC Bank v. Griswold, G-R-I-S-W-O-L-D, Wisconsin Appeals Court, 2010. Business records cannot be the basis for the collector's summary judgment motion if they are unaccompanied by an affidavit swearing to or certifying the records. Got a case citation of Unifund, UNIFUND, CCR Partners versus Harrell, HARRELL. That's August of 05, Connecticut. And that also is available at www.consumerlaw.org/unreported. Then there's one other one, Suggs, S-U-G-G-S, V. Sherman Acquisition, L.P., Florida Circuit Court, September of 2005. A debt buyer cannot merely file documents received from the original creditor, even if they are retained in the debt buyer's regular course of business. They must have been kept in the original creditor's regular course of business, and an affidavit must authenticate that fact. Similarly, an affidavit cannot certify documents if the substance of the affidavit conflicts with the documents themselves. I mean, common sense, right? Palisades Collection, LLC, versus Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z. And that's a New York court, December of 2005. And another one, Barajas, B-A-R-A-J-A-S, V, Harvest Credit Management. And that's Roman numeral 6-B, LLC. And that's a Texas Appeals Court, August of 2008. And you'll notice that you're hearing some of these same citations more than once. Very, very interesting. There's some very good information in these. And then some of these were, you've heard them more than once. I would recommend going and reading some of these. The more the stuff you read, the more used to it you're going to become. I mean, it is going to help you. All right. For example, let's go back. Similarly, an affidavit cannot certify documents if the substance of the affidavit conflicts with the documents themselves. Okay. Well, gee, do you think that case I mentioned to you in Kansas where the account numbers are different and the amounts are different might be a problem for them? I think so. For example, an affidavit may state a total dollar amount owed, while component numbers in the attached business records may add up to a different number. In one case, the court cited with disapproval a debt buyer's affidavits and other documents that included three different interest rates and which referred to the debt buyer as being the original owner and the entity from whom goods or services were purchased. And we mentioned that before. So here's some stuff just about affidavits. This is just touching on some of the stuff on how valuable it is on looking at this information, looking at the affidavits, looking at specifically what the affidavit says in relation to what documents are provided along with it. It is absolutely critically important to do that. And I see that we have somebody on the board. Guest 64 has been putting a lot of these case citations on here. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Your efforts in doing that are very much appreciated. It is this is a cooperative effort here, obviously. But this will give you just a little bit of an idea of what is available out here when you get a hold of one of these books. And on some of these, I only read several, two, three, maybe four case citations. And some of these, there might be as many as 10, 12, 14, 18 of them. It truly is amazing to see this, the detail that this goes into. Now, just so you understand, the material that I'm reading from here and discussing, the collection actions, this is the strategy book that the attorneys use that train to go to bat for us, the consumer attorneys, not the bad guys, but the guys that are on our side. So basically what you're doing is you're getting information to help you learn and think in terms of exactly the way a lawyer would be representing you in court and looking at the things, these details that you need to look at and be able to make these arguments. And this is all just over affidavits. And we spent almost an hour and 20 minutes doing that. So this is this gives you a little taste of things to come. I hope it's been beneficial to people. And at this point in time, I'm going to get ready to unmute everybody. I know this is going to be kind of a zoo when I do.